present the news quiz with your chairman, Barry Took.
Hello and welcome once again to the news quiz. This week we're at the Babbicombe Theatre in Torquay. We start with a cutting from the BBC Aerial magazine about underwater video technology, read by Charlotte Green.
We've thrown a lot of money and effort into the Shark Special. For years we wanted to make such a programme, and new technology has now allowed us to do it. The technique involves attaching a camera to a long pole held over the side of a boat.
God help us when the Japanese find out. Well, thank you, Mike Cobb, for spotting that. Now let's meet the teams. Would you welcome first, on my right, Nick Clark and Tony Hawks. Facing them on my left, Alan Corran and Steve Punt. Before we start round one, here's a TV listing from the Western Mail.
Channel 4, 10:55, proof. A photographer spurns the advances of his housekeeper and begins a friendship with a dishwasher.
Don't wait to see the kids. Thank you, Dorothy Scaglione of South Glamorgan, for that. That's a Welsh name, isn't it? Dorothy Scaglione. Well, thank you very much, Dorothy, for sending us that. Nick, your first question. How statistically did straw clutch at straws?
Oh, it's a BBC question already. We've only been here for a couple of minutes. I think this is to do with Mr. Jack Straw, the Labour representative, and the fact that when he produced some startling statistics, which were covered by the BBC in a news broadcast, an exception was taken by his opposite number, Mr. Michael Howard, who thought it wasn't a story and the statistics were very, very old. And it occurred to me that what he really wanted us to do that day was to cover a story about the fact that for 24 hours before, no one had escaped from prison. Now, this is the sort of good news which we ought to have been covering. Instantly, they've got a new idea. This sculptor, Christo, is going to cover all the prisons in sticky tape, and then no one will get away anymore.
Shadow Home Secretary Jack Straw claims crime has tripled since 1979, but the government says its sums prove it's only gone up by a factor of three. The Home Office says these figures are out of date, but Mr. Straw believes it's the principle that counts. If sheep rustling in the pastures around Oxford Street is on the up, then it's on the up. Tony, your question now. Who wanted to shoot today's messenger?
Oh, well, I suppose this would be about Jonathan Aitken wanting to have a go at John Humphreys, accusing the BBC once again of being biased or partisan or what have you. And he actually described it as being the BBC being the Blair Broadcasting Association. Presumably by this he meant that it's got programmes, but no one knows what they are yet. And he didn't like the way John Humphreys kept saying yes, but all the time in the interview. Presumably he wanted him to be more polite and just say yes, thank you.
Tony, I'll give you, this is how it goes. Like, Tony, would you like to say anything else?
All right, I'll say something else.
That's the style of questioning we're now going for. Barry, would you like to say something now?
Well, if I may, yes. This is about senior Tory minister Jonathan Aitken, who accused the BBC of anti-government bias. He claimed John Humphreys of the Today programme interrupted Kenneth Clark 32 times in 10 minutes, but in fact Mr. Humphreys only ever interjects when absolutely necessary. Excuse me. Hello? Yes, John, I've got that. Yes. Apparently it was only 31 times. In a counter-move to these accusations, BBC's Panorama is giving the Prime Minister a full 1 hour to himself to explain all his latest thinking, although there will be 59 minutes of intermission. Steve, who said, "That's another fine mess you got me into, ole"?
This is... How many Spanish fishermen does it take to change a light bulb, isn't it? Only one, but the new light bulb will be much smaller than the recommended size. Yeah, now this is Senior Birdseye and his jolly gang who've been going around the Atlantic looking for anything that lives in the sea and can be seen with the naked eye and bunging it in the paella. And the EC quotas people who've been about as spineless as the jellyfish we're all going to have to eat when the Spanish have caught everything else. So I think that's that one.
That's right, that's it. These are further developments in the Atlantic fishing row, with Canada accused of piracy and Spain accused of using fine mesh nets. In a shock move, many Cornish fishermen have come out. I'm sorry. Many Cornish fishermen have come out in support of the Canadians by flying their flag, which the papers reported as a red maple leaf, but is in fact a white skull over white bones on a black background. Alan, here's a piece of music for you.
It's my party and I cry if I want to, cry if I want to, cry if I want to, cry if I want to. You would cry too if it happened to you.
Well, that was Leslie Gore singing It's My Party. Now, question is, is it time for all good members to come to the aid of the chairman?
I thought I was hoping it would be the one about the goose that fell in love with the phone booth. Is that coming up?
Yes.
I thought it might, yes. Is this about poor Jimmy Hanley's father?
The son.
I had a great deal of respect for Jimmy Hanley. He ran a thing called Jim's Inn, where you would appear on television in black and white on a 4-inch screen and sell you HP sauce and tins of beans. But the family's gone downhill a bit since then, and he spawned a thing which is now attempting to run the Conservative Party. Somewhat inadequately, although in Torbay, where we're all Conservatives, I think young Jeremy Hanley is doing a fine job. Although perhaps he should make way for Geoffrey Archer. But I think it's about John Major saying that he wouldn't, under any circumstances, sack Jeremy Hanley for at least 3 minutes. It'd better be about that. If it's about the goose, I should be very upset. It means I'll have missed it. Another goose falls in love with another phone booth.
No, you're all right. You're on the right lines. This refers to speculation surrounding whether Conservative chairman Jeremy Hanley is to lose his job. Rumours started to spread when an advert appeared saying, wanted odd job man for short-term vacancy, might suit village idiot with posh accent. However, as the BBC strives to be fair to everyone, we must point out that this is just a silly joke, and we apologise to village idiots everywhere. And the scores are, at the end of the first round, 4-4. We start round two with a cutting from The Guardian.
A Greek petrol station robber, upset when he found less cash than he expected, locked owner Nikos Lambrou in a storeroom and manned the pumps for 4 hours. Then he made off with £700. £500 more than was in the till to start with.
Well, thank you, Michael Robinson of Huddersfield, for sending us that. Nick, your question again. Where were the Brits swamped by a forest fire?
Oh, no, this is the sad, sad, sad business of the Oscars, isn't it? You probably didn't notice that Britain got Best Key Grip, did you? And we're also nominated for Best Post Office Counter Video. But that was more or less it. It's probably just as well that Hugh Grant didn't win anything, or Liz Hurley would have cried, and the people who paid her a great deal of money to advertise their stuff that she puts on her face would have been very depressed to see it dribbling down past her ears.
I suppose you're right. One particular problem was that Hollywood didn't seem to recognise our stars. The Americans had never seen Liz Hurley before and don't know who she is or what she does, whereas in Britain we've seen her loads of times. Still, boyfriend Hugh Grant put them right, and now she's got an entry in the Who's That of the film world. As the couple arrived with Miss Hurley in a revealing ball gown, rumours started to spread that they'd fallen out. Like Bob Geldof and Paula Yates. Tony, who was driven out because of a little elf?
I think this would be about Michael Schumacher. He's in the Brazilian Grand Prix, and he pulls into the pit and he says, fill her up, please. And they say, what do you want, 3-star or 4-star or unleaded or leaded? And he says, well, I don't mind. I'm in a bit of a hurry, if you don't mind. Just pop in what you see fit. And they put in the elf stuff, which makes the car go much faster than everyone else's. So they put it in his car and David Coulthard's, I think, and of course, they were disqualified immediately afterwards, really, which was... But the technology's overtaken them, hasn't it, in this world of motor racing? But I was very pleased to read somewhere that they actually have to have a plank of wood in the bottom of the motor car for some reason. The drivers are more worried about this bit going wrong than the rest of the car, because they'd pull into the pits, and there'd be a chippy that would have to deal with it. And he'd say, not now, mate, I'm on my break now.
Yes, this was the cheating German driver, Michael Schumacher, who was disqualified for using illegal fuel, and plucky Brit David Coulthard, who was deprived of a magnificent result due to a minor fuel infringement. The McLaren team were fortunate to avoid a penalty for failing to measure the thickness of their plank. They explained Nigel Mansell wasn't even in the race. Steve, will you have a listen to this?
Pass the dutchie on the left hand side. Pass the dutchie on the left hand side. It a go bun.
Give me the music, make me jump, bam, bam.
It a go dun.
Well, that was Musical Youth singing Pass the Dutchie. And your question is, which one introduced two original little numbers?
Ah, yes, use the word dutchie, I think. Tremendous there. Yes, this is Prince Charles, isn't it? And he's obviously worried about a future change of government, possibly privatising the royal family or something, or making them derive their own income. So he's gone into business, and he's gone out talking to his plants again, and this time he's said, I'm going to turn you all into a delicious and nutritious drink for all the family. He's invented a herbal drink, which is non-alcoholic, and the rest of the royal family are backing him to the hilt, apart from Princess Margaret, who hasn't ordered any yet. So, yes, it's Highgrove wine, I think, this.
It's a bit unfortunate, isn't it, that they're called number ones and number twos, these
things? Well, it's the royal we, I suppose, isn't it?
The other bit, you said there were two things, is his being shrunk to 3 inches to appear in a cartoon film. They're making the old man of Srinagar, or wherever it is, into a cartoon film. He's being shrunk digitally to 3 inches tall.
Oh. Well, it was about the drinks. I'm interested about him being shrunk.
Yes, he was. Well, that's Lady Diana's problem. No,
not anymore, it isn't.
He wrote this book, and it's being turned into a Disney movie. And he's going to come out of it 3 inches tall. Probably singing a Tim Rice number, but...
This is all about the soft drink business. The drinks are manufactured by Schweppes, while the extra gardening has put Charles back out. Not the first time he's done that in the garden with you-know-who. Alan, your question now. What new tape can you order? Order!
No, this is the Boothroyd thing, isn't it? They have produced, as if it were not enough to have seen it the first time, tapes of speakers of the House of Commons shouting things at one another. And it starts off with Tony Pandy and it goes on to Boothroyd. And it is... they believe it's going to be sold.
It is the launch of a new cassette tape of great parliamentary speeches since 1978.
Quite short, isn't it?
It is, actually. If this is a sales success, there are plans to follow it up with Margaret Thatcher's Argentinian joke book and the Neil Kinnock video of how to speak succinctly and concisely with brevity and compactness without repetition, hesitation or repetition. Jonathan Aitken tried to launch his travel guide to the Middle East for completely above-board arms dealers. Except that he's never been there and he doesn't know any. And the scores at the end of the second round are still tied at 8-all. Well done, Jack. Nick, where will Little Green Men appear in black and white?
I like this very, very much. This is about a film that was made in New Mexico in 1947. It's something we haven't been allowed to see because it's been hidden away by the Pentagon. It's been too shocking for the people to be able to stand. And it's about a spaceship that crashed, killing a lot of aliens inside, whose bodies were then on the film and shown and dissected. And so we know a lot about aliens. It hasn't so far been revealed. I think you can actually hear some of them speaking before they snuff it. And one of them's heard saying something like, we are completely united over Europe. Oh, yes, we are, most certainly.
This does refer to an old piece of film purporting to show that a being from outer space crash-landed in America in 1947. The footage shows a pale, bald creature with no visible ears, nose or eyes. So it's obviously either an alien from another cosmos or someone's lost a snooker ball. The 91-minute film is to be screened this summer in Sheffield and may prove there's intelligent life in space, although whether it'll do the same for Sheffield is anyone's guess. rather be in Babbicombe than there, I might tell you. However, Tony, here's a piece of music for you. Well, that's What Friends Are For by Cilla Black and Cliff Richard. And your question is, who didn't make a Laura Laura Friends?
Well, I'm glad you said that that was by Cilla Black and Cliff Richard. We wouldn't have recognised that because she didn't sound very piercing on that, did she, at all?
No, not really.
Sounded quite nice. But Cilla Black, obviously, we're talking about, who at the BAFTA Awards on Sunday, Blind Date won the Lou Grade Award, I think it's called, for Significant and Particularly Popular Television Programme. And she got up afterwards and just said, I just want to thank all those idiots that appear on Blind Date. And was then a little bit baffled why people thought this was ungracious. And then sort of used a bit of Jeremy Hanley damage limitation. And said that, if, of course they're not idiots, if they're idiots, everyone in this country is an idiot. And dug herself a little bit of a bigger hole, I thought. That's quite a Laura Laura idiot, isn't it? It does so well in the ratings Blind Date, really, because it's like a car accident. And, you know you shouldn't look at it, but you just have to.
Thank you, Tony. Well done. This is Cilla Black, who collected a special BAFTA award for Blind Date and then described her TV guests as idiots, which is ridiculous. It's the people who gave the award who are idiots. For those who've never seen it, Blind Date is the one where prospective partners are asked inane questions and given daft answers. It's a bit like Prime Minister's Question Time. Except that they actually do give answers. Steve, your question now. Who reckons diamonds aren't an old girl's best friend?
This is the one possible survivor of the 1947 UFO crash. It's Barbara Cotland, isn't it? And she's she's decided to sell all her jewellery because she wants to replace it with cheaper jewellery, which seems a bit strange. So if you spot a white-haired person in a pink hat in your local Argos, then that's what's going on.
This is the story of Dame Barbara Cartland and the 70-year-old precious stones she keeps in her boudoir, although Mick Jagger and Bill Wyman deny the charge. There was a rather unfortunate end to her press conference when Dame Barbara smiled for the cameras and four reporters were killed in a freak polyfiller dust explosion. Alan, who said, I never knew there was so much of other people's in it?
I think you're picking up on the ad for Radio Times or TV Times or whatever.
Yeah.
There is a man called Halliwell who wrote a book.
Yeah.
Saying what was good and bad on television.
Oh, yes.
And this makes a great deal of money. And he died, Halliwell, and his relatives, who remained very close to the book because it was a great deal of money and it still keeps them all in foot warmers, saw another book called The Big Boys Radio Times Book of What to See on Television, and everything in it was exactly identical to what there was in Halliwell's book. And it means that someone associated with the Radio Times was a bit naughty and plagiarised it. It's Princess Michael of the BBC has written this guide to television, and it's a snitch from Halliwell, and the bloke has been given the bullet, and we shall all sleep easier in our beds.
A spokesman for Halliwell said it was a blatant piece of plagiarism and it shouldn't be allowed, and the Radio Times editor accepted this, saying, it's a blatant piece of plagiarism that shouldn't be allowed. And the scores at the end of round three are still evenly poised at 12-all. Before we start the final round, here's a cutting from the Tynmouth News.
At the Finance and General Purposes Committee of Tynmouth Council this week, councillors stressed that the provision of toilets during the summer season was vital. Councillor Fred Tooley said, when we were told there were going to be new toilets at the Carlton Centre, everybody was relieved.
Well, thank you, R.J. Middleton of Timoth, for that. Nick, here's a piece of music for you.
This pullover I find very smart, for it tells me that we will never part. And don't you worry, my little sweetheart, just like you do, it's closest to my heart.
That was Jess Conrad singing This Pullover. Your question is, what did a cardigan pull over his revelers?
Now, that isn't an obscure piece of music. I don't know what it is. And it is to do, I guess, with the Earl of Cardigan and his unfortunate house party, to which he invited a lot of people. He was a bit hard up for cash, so he let it out to someone who was having a sort of rave. And since these people were only paying 15 quid a piece each for a black tie dinner, I don't think he should have been surprised that they all turned up completely paralytic. And he stood by the doorways fending them off, because I didn't like the look of them.
They turned up and they were sick on his foot. He stood here and said, I'm the Earl of Cardigan. Someone went, saw that, it was in the Telegraph, and then he got very upset.
Well, it's
lucky it wasn't the Earl of Sandwich.
Right.
Had a right to be upset.
In an ideal world, you want someone to be sick on both feet.
Why?
Well, your shoes then still match.
Tony, what's good for the goose but not for the caller?
Aha. Well, much to Ellen's chagrin, I've got the goose phone booth story here. This is about a goose called Victoria, from a little village, I think, in Sussex called Westdean. She wouldn't let the local callers into this call box. She'd sort of hiss and peck at them. And they were rather frightened of her, really. And the goose wouldn't let them in because apparently she'd lost her lover, who was called Albert, I think, aptly. And Albert apparently had been killed by a mink. And she was grieving, and this is, I read it all in the article, it's all true. And they thought that she wouldn't let them in the phone box because she looked in and saw a reflection and thought that the reflection was Albert. Now, why she was going out with a goose that was an exact replica of her, I don't know. But anyway, so she was guarding Albert, who she thought was in there, and in the end they kind of, I think they just have made, I think they got another Albert in and did it.
Locals say the goose is almost human. It went into the kiosk and immediately started hissing. Well, they did say, oh, please. Not in Torquay, please. The goose called Victoria wouldn't come out until someone started making nuisance calls, whispering pâté de foie gras. This story just goes to prove what we've all known for years, that British Telecom and a goose are very similar. Everyone says they can both stick their bills up there. Well, anyway, I don't know. Steve, your question now. Where did my mate spread a hair-raising tale?
This Marmite story, I just have to be a bit careful because I can feel Mr. Corrin's gimlet eye boring into my head at the moment, because it's become my pate Marmite, hasn't it? There's this rumour going round that if you have no hair...
Steady.
now, this was rather what I was afraid of. What you do is you get a jar of Marmite and you scoop it out and you plaster it all over your head, and apparently this makes your hair grow. But what they haven't told you is whether it will give you hairy toast.
Well, that is a new concept.
Alan, it does work round the sides, Alan, doesn't it?
Works round the sides.
Yeah.
Would you describe yourself as being slightly bald, Alan?
No.
Well, some people...
waiting to grow hair.
Yeah.
It's absolutely true. This is the news that bald men have been spreading Marmite on their heads to make them grow thick, dark, luxuriant hair. There were reports that Ronald Reagan had tried it, got confused, used marmalade by mistake, and went prematurely orange. A couple of years ago, the spread was being used in a similar manner to help men overcome impotence, which neatly explains why so many were discovered to have a small pot of Marmite stuck on the end of their shopping list. Why did 15 men sit on a dead man's chest, Alan?
We've all sung this song at some point in our lives. 15 men on a dead man's chest, yo-ho-ho and a bottle of rum without really thinking about it. Because it doesn't actually work unless 15 of the men are tiny and the stiff is enormous. Otherwise, it would be about 9 men on a dead man's chest and a couple on his feet and one on his face.
Not much of a song in that, though.
Not much of a song in that. I'd like you all to come in on the chorus, one on his face. Now, it turns out it wasn't a dead man at all. It is a small virgin island, or a small virgin island. It's been discovered by the Royal Geographical Society. And it turns out that in the 17th century, Blackbeard the pirate was faced with a mutinous crew. And he left them all on this island, which is called Dead Man's Chest, because he thought they'd kill one another. He's probably the patron saint of Conservative Chief Whip. Anyway, he put all these mutineers on an island. He went back 30 days later, and 15 of them were still alive. Not entirely intact, but as alive as you get. And hence the song.
Yes, you've done it proud. The surviving 15 explained the decision was only taken after a discussion of the moral ethics involved, and then they ate all the vegetarians. Before we reveal the final scores, let's see what cuttings the teams have brought along. Nick, have you brought us a cutting?
I have, thanks to the good offices of Mrs. Nash in Nottingham. Biographical note from the programme for the clandestine marriage at the Queen's Theatre. Christopher Benjamin Sterling. On Broadway, he played Dogberry in Much Ado. His bottom has been seen in Regent's Park.
Tony.
Well, I like the sign that's backstage here at the Babbacombe Theatre in the toilet. It actually says, please remember not to flush this toilet during the performance. We haven't heard it go off yet, have we? I've got a clip as well, which is from the Leicester Mercury. It says, bargain footwear for all the family. Full-length boots, now £5. Ankle boots from £9.99. Ladies' shoes, buy one, get one free.
Thank you, Tony. Steve.
This is a tad tasteless, but I'm going to read it anyway because it happened abroad. Mr. Gabor Neugebauer, 21, had been shot several times while his girlfriend, fellow German Miss Anja Habscheit, 20, was decapitated. Her head has never been found, making it impossible to determine the cause of death.
Alan.
The producer wants me to do this one because the Chippenham Deanery Synod News fell on his mat this morning. And it says, item 3, Diocesan Synod Report. Owing to the difficulty of finding any member of the Diocesan Synod who had any recollection of what had taken place at the last meeting, there was no report.
Thank you all, and let's look at the final scores. Well, there's no problem about that, because it's 16 all. Before we leave you, here's a cutting from the Daily Mail, sent in by Sarah Branwood of Crystal Palace.
Basil, the golden collie, was notorious for his amorous exploits. A string of owners had cause to complain about his frisky behaviour with their pets, among them a retired magistrate and a brigadier.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Alan Corran, Nick Clark, Tony Hawkes and Steve Punt. The chairman was Barry Took and the news was read by me, Charlotte Green. The programme was written by Ian Pattinson. The producer was Aled Evans.